Time is 8:20. I'm Howard Feldman. Ian Bessarabi joining me in studio. We're talking the future of work. A couple of things that we could look forward to next year. We're talking obviously about our work environment. Give us some things that are going to change.
So Howard, good morning. Thank you. It's good to actually be at this time of the year because typically, this is when people start to prepare for the year ahead and we kind of, look back on 2019 and wish it away, I think, a little bit. I think the interesting thing also, just putting this into context before we begin with the list, is that, we're coming to the end of a decade, which is quite hard to believe. And we're entering a new decade. So a lot of people are seeing this as a turning point, even.
Didn't even think of that whole decade business.
So it's the end of the first decade. So
we're no longer teenagers.
Yeah. So next year music, you can start playing the 20s. We're going into the 20s. You know, that's
exactly.
The new thing. And I think psychologically people are seeing this as like a reset or an opportunity to really step forward, you know, and I think the key things that have come out of some of the sessions I've been doing, which have been very different this year, I must say, usually this time of the year, it's very difficult to get people engaged and get people to think about, the new year because
that's
they want to go on holiday.
So are you seeing people engaged?
Absolutely.
Now?
But it's engaged on different levels. So it's not about like strategic planning in the traditional sense.
Okay.
So nobody wants to sit down and talk about budgets and targets and that, even though they do need to be done. And I think there is still a very important aspect of that. But where we talk about is we kind of sit around in an informal setting, consume lots of pizza and really just look at key things that are going to move the needle. So one of them that really came out, and there's six of them. We're not going to go through all six. We're going to go through three of them. But I think the one that is becoming very obvious is that organizational structures are going to flatten. And what that essentially means is the typical hierarchy is going to fade away. Now that has significant consequences, but it also has huge opportunities. And what that means in a nutshell, Howard, is that we're going to see a lot more autonomy, a lot more empowerment of individuals, and you're going to see a lot more interaction between what we would call different levels. So typically what you would have is you'd have your typical exco, manco, and then the people that kind of just execute on what those two levels kind of instruct or dictate, some people would say. What you're going to have is far more interaction, far more
You know, if
discussion.
You think about the way society works today, that makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
You know, social media has flattened out society because all of a sudden, each and every one of us have access to whomever we want. They might not answer us, but we really, everybody's on Twitter or LinkedIn or Instagram or has an email address. So we can go directly to people. We can talk to whomever we want to talk to. Donald Trump tweets out, I mean, he's arguably the most powerful man in the world, and he's tweeting out his thoughts, which we can respond to as well. So a whole social structure has changed in terms of hierarchy. It's absolutely obvious that company hierarchies are going to change. They have to.
Absolutely. And we can no longer fight that, and we can no longer, create this differentiation between, the workers and kind of the management. You know, I always hated that, and I still despise the fact it's us and them. And, you know, even in some big corporates, you have like different floor levels. You have the sixth floor and the fifth floor.
Oh, gosh, I forgot about that.
And those things are a thing of the past. And I was talking to somebody who's in the automotive industry, and that's a very operational environment. And what he's felt is that having like an autocratic leadership style has actually not served them well. It's because in times of crisis and in times of really hardships where the industry suffers, people don't step up because they don't know how. And he said one of the biggest eye-openers was he bumped into one of his employees in a shopping mall. We were talking about shopping malls earlier, but he bumped into his employee, and he said the thing that surprised him the most was he didn't recognize the person. And when he said he didn't recognize him, he didn't recognize the personality. Here was a person who had a family. He was responsible. He was taking care of it. Whereas when that person walked into the office or work on the Monday, they were subservient. They were kind of a little bit disruptive in a way. And there he looked at this person. He said, how can this person be
two different people?
And I think that was one of the key discussions that came out, is that management are willing to give more and allow autonomy, but they're expecting accountability in return. Mm-hmm. So that's a very key one. I think for me, it's probably going to be very interesting to see how that evolves, especially in big organizations. Because in smaller startups, it's relatively easy.
Yes, because everybody has to do and perform multiple functions, and everybody is operating on a different level. But as companies become more corporatized or more structured, maybe it becomes a real challenge.
Absolutely, and I think with the pace of work that's changing. You have to be flexible. You know, we mentioned in a couple of shows previously about agile. You know, people need to be agile. You don't come in and have a week that was the same as the week before, or the week before that.
Not.
Everything is dynamic. And you have to look at that as exciting. If you don't look at that as exciting, you'll despise it.
Well, I think for somebody that likes the structure, that likes structure, it is quite difficult. Charles asking, so what's the alternative? What is the alternative structure? It's a great question, because it's all very well to throw out this hierarchical system, but how does one, you know, what does it get replaced with? You certainly don't want anarchy.
No.
You need accountability. You need people to report in. You need to understand what's really going on in an organization. So what do you think the alternative is?
So there's two key words that sum it up for me. The one is about inclusion, and the other one is about collaboration. And I know those might sound a little bit similar, but inclusion means that to Charles's point, is people need to be included in the decision-making process. I'll give you a very quick example of a strategy that was done collectively by 200 people over a period of time.
Sure, that makes me nervous.
It sounds ridiculous, but it worked. And when I say it worked, it was experimental. A team said that they're going to try out a new way to put the strategy for the following year forward. And what they did is they started it with what was a collaborative tool. It could be done with Google Docs. It could be done with Word or whatever. And they created this, and everybody had a voice. And when I say they had a voice, everybody could have access to that document. And over a period of time, you were given a time frame to add your views on that.
Mm.
And as it progressed to the company get together, which was the annual get together at the end of the year, there was a vote. So the team who were coordinating, and once again, this is different from management. I'm very choicy with my words. This was the coordination team that were pulling this all together. They stood up and they presented all the key findings, all the inputs, etc. And people were allowed to comment, ask, but within an hour, it then went down to a vote, and it was majority decided.
Wow.
It was for me, it was the most.
Look, it's an interesting thing.
Unbelievable.
It is interesting,
experience.
But I don't know. I mean, can you imagine almost how slow certain decisions can be? You know, there's this concept of radical transparency.
Yes.
And Bridgewater adheres to that. They're this fund. What's his name? Ray Dalio.
Mm.
And what that means, they've got about 2,000 employees, and what they do is, everything is open.
Yeah.
So you could, as a junior person, criticize the CEO publicly, and they have a get together. I read a report by one of the guys that said he walked into this room of 200 people and they were listing their worst managers, and his name was number one because it's got red.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I certainly don't adhere to, I don't think that necessarily that would work. I think somewhere in the middle is probably the answer. Is there a specific answer, or does each organization have to try and find its own way of of managing the hierarchies?
So I think the one thing we have to accept that it's going to require a different set of leadership skills. And to your point, I think the point about naming and shaming publicly is somewhat irresponsible.
Yeah, it doesn't definitely.
And I think
me.
That's taking things to the extreme. At the end of the day, there does need to be someone in a position of authority. There needs to be an ultimate decision maker or a group of decision makers. But where the key, and to come back to what Charles was asking earlier, what is the alternative? The alternative is around more inclusion and collaboration. Once again, to give a practical example, often you get a document or you get some information and you're asked to add your comments. But you know it's just a process of like, this is due process. We've already made the decision, but how would we just want you to have a look at it. But you know that.
Yeah, there's no
point. And that trust factor, you need to bring that in where you say, listen, your input is valuable, but at the same time, and this is where I think we need to have some tough discussions, is that if you, mention these things, you need to stand by them. So you can't just be somebody that walks into the corridor and says, oh, Howard, you know, he always comes up with that stuff. And he said, well, why don't you say it there? Why don't you stand by it? People can't be these like sidewalk commentators. You know, you go, if you want to make a comment, be prepared to change, be prepared to take ownership of that. And I think that is going to be exciting. I see it as exciting, is that if you promote inclusion, you'll get the best out of your people because they'll feel they're part of it. Mm. Some people won't like it, but that's the challenge.
I tend to agree with you. Very, very interesting indeed. I think it also may be, is also dependent on what type of environment you're running.
Absolutely.
If it's a corporate, if it's a factory, etc. It is 8:31. Ian Basarabi in a studio. We're talking about the future of work, and we're talking about some of the changes for next year. What can we expect in 2020? But we're going to continue this conversation after we've spoken with Steve Ambrose. We want to also hear from him what is going on with data. The Competition Commission giving us a report on Vodacom and MTN's data pricing, saying that within 6 months that needs to be reduced. We are having some issues getting hold of Stephen. So whilst we do that, let's continue our conversation. All right. So I don't want to get caught up specifically on one issue.
Sure.
But there's no doubt that that company structures are changing. What else can we expect next year?
So I think, Howard, there's a lot of linking to some of these. There's an interlink and a connection, and that's what I've tried to bring together, is that recognition still remains huge to ensure employee engagement. I think one of the key things that people don't acknowledge and they don't appreciate is just saying thank you to someone. Just appreciating them.
And when they've done a good job, saying you've done a great job.
Yeah.
It just is so much more powerful in establishing your credibility.
Yeah.
Because then when you do criticize somebody, you're able to, you know, because we've spoken about it before, the criticism sandwich, which is saying when you need to talk to somebody about something difficult and you call them in and you say, Ian, you're doing a great job, you know, overall, yuck, you're really doing a great job, but, and then you end it with saying something positive again. And in truth, I always have adhered to that. I always thought the criticism sandwich worked because I thought it brought balance. You're not saying you're only bad, you're saying you're good, but this is bad. Turns out that all the studies show that actually it's useless because all the person is doing is waiting for that but, and that's all they hear.
Yeah.
So rather just focus on that. Mm. Why it's important to your point is if you've established credibility over the period before, Ian, you're doing a great job at this. Ian, that's fantastic. And then I call you in and say, look, I just want to get onto the same page. This is a problem. We need to try and find a way to address it. You hear it much more so because I've established credibility and you know that I'm able to see the good and the bad. So I think that is very, very significant. All right, Ian. So we've spoken about two of the changes that you could see happening next year. Give us a third.
So Howard, I think the third one is, and somebody said to me, don't talk about it because it's negative. And I said, no, we have to talk about this. And I think this one is where they say 2020 will be the death of a single skill set. And that's a powerful.
Why is that
one.
Negative? I think it's a positive.
Yeah. So someone says death is negative. So I say, okay, well,
death, really?
Context atheist. Of the
important. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Why would that atheist say that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll ask you after the show. Sorry, not giving away the name. No, but I think this is where the realization is actually starting to come to the surface, that Jobs for Life and this whole, you have a career, you leave school and you have a career and that's going to be it until you retire and you're going to walk out with a gold watch and all that. And I know that sounds very cliche to that, but we've spoken about it, but it's a reality. Possible. And just linking it back to what Stephen was saying about data. As much as we moan and we complain, if we look at our connectivity capabilities now compared to 5 years ago, we're leaps and bounds.
Okay. And that's the private industry. That's
absolutely. And what that does is, as individuals, it enables us, it's empowered us to be more capable of doing more.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you where an area, and this is where it links to the skills, is how many people are able to work from home or work remotely doing jobs or doing tasks or whatever you want for different companies. I know somebody that does data capturing, or they don't actually call it data capturing now, but they call it data validation. And she spends 4 hours a day in between dropping her kids at school and fetching her kids for a US company. And they send her stuff, and all she does is she validates stuff. She goes into the internet, she checks some information, updates that information, and she gets paid for that. And all she has to do is sit in front of her computer.
And that's so important, especially in our environment. And it's certainly a conversation I've had a number of times with Kathy Kaley, and we were saying, how do we get people to realize that there are other ways to make money, to supplement your income? And as South Africans, we need to do that. But this is actually a worldwide trend. And Jake Shepherd from Synthesis was on our show, and he was talking about one of the things is to be a lifelong learner.
Yeah.
And really what that means is that you have to continually upskill. You need to continue to gain new skills and different ways of evolving. It's that word that you used earlier. You have to be agile. And if we don't instill that in ourselves and in our children, then I think we are going to be in trouble.
And Howard, the most important thing, and I can say this as a parent and as an individual that has embarked on continuous learning, is you have to open your mind to different ways of doing things. You know, and I'm the same. When I think about having to study more, learn, you know, you like start getting halves and you start thinking about sitting in exam rooms.
But you don't need to do that.
No, you don't need to do that.
You don't need to go near an exam.
Absolutely. And that for me is, it's a mindset shift, you know, and there are so many out there. You just need to go and Google online courses as an example. There's Udemy, there's Coursera, there's so many, and anybody that wants a list of those, I'm happy to share those. Because,
well, in fact, Ian, I was actually going to ask you that.
Yes.
Will you create a list that we could share on our Facebook page of environments where people could upskill for free? They could they could do these courses. I think it is absolutely vital to be able to do that. And the big problem with a lot of people, certainly our age maybe and older, but possibly older than us, is there's also a fear of technology. You have to get over it. You have to get over it. You need to become familiar with finding your way around the internet. There is no excuse. You have to do it.
I can't even add to that, because that is exactly the point, is that it's a speed train. And when I say a speed train, you're not going to stop a speed train.
And you don't need to learn to code.
No one's saying learn to code,
but you have to be able to be comfortable around the basics of what technology is. And there is a whole world that opens up. Everything is available to you if you can make yourself comfortable around technology.
And Howard, the one thing that is incredible, which I find so liberating in a sense, that I'm in control. A lot of these courses are at your own pace. So you're not...
It does require a lot of self-discipline.
Absolutely.
Though,
it requires self-discipline. But for some people that feel intimidated, you know, like I wouldn't... I hate being in a classroom environment trying to keep up with everyone, especially when you're doing things part-time, because everybody's got different things. But when you do a course that is something that you can log on for an hour in the morning. You get up in the morning, you've got nothing to do. You log on, you read something, and you've added value to your life. You've educated yourself for an hour.
Yeah, you know, I was telling our kids the other day, I was busy typing and I was sitting and working and I was writing an email or an article, and they said, you type, you know, when did you actually get quick learning to type? And I said to my kids, and I remember it so clearly, I was in high school and I don't know, we had a typewriter at home. I got a book because there was no internet. I got a typing book and I sat for hours and I taught myself to type because my handwriting was always terrible. And I knew that we didn't think of the, you know, where things were going in terms of computers to that extent, but I just knew that this was a skill that I needed. And I was 16 or 17, however old I was, and I sat down, and I remember friends and people laughing at me because I, you know, because then you could do typing as a school subject, and it was, you know, like, but really, you know, like, what was I doing sitting and practicing typing? Right. But it was one of the more important things that I learned.
So you're right. Our typing was, it's a typing, if I remember correctly, I'm going to show my age now. If you dropped maths, you did typing.
Oh.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, I think if you dropped maths, you did typing, and I stand to be corrected, and probably some of my school friends will bash me after this. But if I think back now, in terms of the technology that's available to do all that math stuff that I never understood at the time, and I still don't understand now.
Yeah, please tell me how looking up anything in a logbook.
Yeah, exactly. when was the last time you used trigonometry? You know, right. I would have used typing far more today. Than
interesting. That. Lee says, I love you, Demi. I'm learning digital marketing and doing an advanced Excel course all in my own time with a full-time job.
That is.
I love that. Absolutely love that.
Thank you, Lee. That's
and,
great.
And all right. So we're going to put Ian. You'll send that list.
Yep.
Or you can just put it on Facebook and tag the Morning Mayhem.
I'm going to put it on Facebook and
tag me. Tag the Morning Mayhem.
Absolutely.
And let's get that out there. It's very, very important. Start looking at, if you are going to take a break in December, spend some time on the sites. You know, I think the other thing is to familiarize yourself with being online, with these environments, with specific sites. And it would be absolutely amazing to start this move and this movement, certainly from you, our listeners, and try and upskill all of us. And there's, in fact, what we should do, Ian, is, I mean, I'm not here next week, but what we should do, well, no, when we come back in January, maybe what we'll do is ask people to say, right, have you found a course?
Yes.
What are you going to do? I'll look for one. Lindy, look for one. We'll get some natty too.
Okay, cool.
Ian, you look for one.
I like that challenge.
And find something that's just a little bit outside of your normal environment and do a course just because you can.
Yeah, I think
that'll be cool.
That's a great one.
Okay. All right, we're going to start that initiative.
I love it.
Absolutely love that. It is 9 o'clock. This is Where We Love and Leave You. Hope you enjoyed. I certainly did. It was very, very interesting to chat to all of our guests. Lynn, thanks as always. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Don't be late.